Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tower of London is a castle, not really actually a tower, that's located in central London, that dates back almost 1,000 years, being established in the wake of the Norman conquest of England in 1066, episode 76, get across it. In 1066, a Norman noble called William the Bastard was so desperate for a new nickname that he invaded and conquered England, establishing a new dynasty of royal rulers, and of course becoming known instead as William the Conqueror. The current ruling British monarch, King Charles III, can directly trace his lineage all the way back to old mate William the Conqueror. So the Normans really were playing for keeps. Anyway, after winning the Battle of Hastings and crowning himself as the new King of England, William had to properly consolidate his newly established power. And one of the ways in which he did this was with the construction of a series of brand new castles across his brand new kingdom. And these castles weren't just military fortifications, although that's one of their primary one of their primary functions was, of course, as a military fortress. But they also served as residences for powerful members of the aristocracy. They served as governmental and administrative centres, as well as, of course, providing a constant reminder to the common folk of England of the new ruling class that had come in and so emphatically set up shop. Now, William built three castles in London out of 36 or so that he built across the kingdom. And one of the reasons he built so many in London is that it was critical for him to maintain very strong control over the city. It was the largest settlement in England at the time, and it was quickly becoming a political and commercial centre point. So it was very important for him to have a firm presence there. And the most notable of the three castles that William built in London was, from a historical standpoint at least, it was built on the banks of the Thames River in the centre of the city once London fell in late 1066, and this castle was the one that would, of course, go on to become the Tower of London, which remains to this day one of London's many immensely famous landmarks. Construction on a building known as the White Tower began around 1078. It's this building that gives the whole castle complex its name, because really it's not much of a tower, honestly. It's definitely more of a castle than it is a tower. The highest point of the Tower of London is 27 metres, and just by way of comparison, another famous tower, the Eiffel Tower, Monuments episode 43, I think it's going to be. You'll have to wait until October to get across in any case. The Eiffel Tower is 330 metres tall. Now, there's a tower. The Tower of London is not very well... Well, look, they got half of it right. It is of London, but it's not much of a tower by today's standard. Anyway, the White Tower, as it's known, should be the White Castle, but I suppose William didn't want to get into a, you know, trademark dispute with the American fast food chain. The White Tower was built of stone. A lot of the other castles that the Normans built were just made of wood, but not this one. It was a mighty building, the White Tower. It was designed to both have and project great strength, and was probably finished around the turn of the 12th century, around 1100, after William's death. Just before this, in 1097, a stone wall was built to replace the palisades around the castle, connecting up to the existing Roman walls that obviously further strengthened it when it was first built. And it quickly became, I have to say, a symbol of oppression for the ordinary English people living in London, especially those who didn't think much of their new Norman overlords. I've said that, you know, by today's standards, the tower is a little bit unimpressive in terms of its size, but back then it, I was going to say it towered over London. Maybe that's why it's called the Tower of London. It did tower over London and was, again, a very stark reminder of the fact that the Normans were large and in charge. Especially in its later history, as we're going to talk about, the Tower of London is most commonly thought of as being a prison. And while a great many high-profile prisoners were indeed kept there, it was a lot more than just a prison, particularly in its earlier years. It was designed, like all of these other castles, to be a political centre and a royal residence, as well as a military fortification. And in the case of the White Tower, the Tower of London, it was a particularly sumptuous royal residence as well at the time. It was where the king would live when he was at home in London. And it was, of course, as a place that the king would hold court and later on hold parliament, it needed to project the grandeur, the opulence and the wealth of the kingdom. And so in its early days, the Tower of London was very, very well appointed. It was a grand and very impressive building to visit and, of course, to live in. And that went for the prisoners too, interestingly, which again we'll come to. But very famously, of course, we can't talk about the Tower of London without talking about the crown jewels. And the keeping of the royal treasury at the Tower of London goes back a long, long way, at least back to 1207 and probably beforehand. The keeper of the crown jewels was a position that was first appointed in 1207. And the crown jewels, even today, they still live in the Tower of London when they're, you know, not being nicked by opportunistic Irishmen, episode 97, Colonel Blood, get across it. But this is one of the more famous aspects of the Tower of London, the fact that it has had the royal treasury for a very long time, or it did have the royal treasury for a very long time, and still today houses the very famous crown jewels, such as St. Stephen's crown, which is used during the coronation of British monarchs, and the coronation spoon, which is an artifact that dates back 800 or so years and is taken very, very seriously for an item of dinnerware. I've never seen a spoon so thoroughly celebrated by a people before. Anyway, those are just some of the artifacts that make up the royal collection there as part of the crown jewels. But let's get into talking about what the Tower of London is most famous for, even if it is a little undeserving of a reputation as being a prison. Well, it was a prison, but it certainly was a great many other things beside, but most people will think of the Tower of London, if a little incorrectly, as being just a prison. But it was used for this purpose. Its first ever prisoner was a bloke named Bishop Ranulph Flambard. He was thrown into prison as a scapegoat when Henry I of England took the throne after the death of his brother William II. William II inherited from William the Conqueror. And William II had had some pretty harsh taxation policies when Henry came to power. He wanted to make a bit of a fresh start for that, and rather than take any of the blame on behalf of his brother, he just whacked this poor bishop into, well, I say poor bishop, the bishop was well and truly into these harsh taxation policies, so he whacked him in prison and said, oh look, it's all this guy's fault. But this wasn't such a bad thing for Bishop Ranulph for a couple of reasons, because as I said, The Tower of London was a lavish and an opulent building, and this went for the quarters in which prisoners were held as well. High-profile prisoners were often kept in the Tower of London because their status, right, as high-ranking members of society, meant that they couldn't possibly be thrown in with the common muck and all, you know, the great unwashed, the rabble like you and I. No, they had to be housed in specially appointed chambers that were befitting of their social rank. And this was the case with Bishop Ranulph. He was thrown into these, you know, again, lavish chambers. But interestingly, Bishop Ranulph wasn't just the first person to be imprisoned in the Tower of London. He was also the first person to escape the Tower of London because he managed to get out by smuggling a length of rope into a cask of wine. I said, Ranulph's conditions were pretty nice. He was allowed to have servants. One night he threw a great big banquet for all the guards that were looking after him. And once he'd got them, you know, good and drunk, they're all off their faces, they fall asleep, pass out, whatever else. He then uses the rope that he'd smuggled in with the wine to abseil out a window and away to freedom. And that was that. The Tower's first ever prisoner was also its first escapee. And not the last, as we'll come to. Anyway, as time went on, The tower proved to be a critically important part of the kingdom's political landscape. To give you an example, right, you might remember episode 295, the Anarchy, get across it, the conflict between Stephen and Matilda as to who would rule England after the death of Henry I in 1035. Well, just to give you an idea of how the tower was perceived at this point in England's history, one of the first things that Stephen did to strengthen his claim to the English throne was to go to London and secure the Tower of London. He took control of the tower and therefore the city and therefore, largely speaking, the kingdom as quick as he could. So you can see how closely associated the Tower of London was with the power of the ruling monarch. If you held the tower, you held the kingdom, or at least that was the perception back then. Eventually, the tower was expanded. If you go and look at pictures of it these days, you'll see it's a very large complex. It's made up of a great many buildings and walls. But to begin with, it was actually just that square castle, the White Tower, right in the middle there. But that changed by the end of the 12th century, in fact, when King Richard I, King Richard the Lionheart, he spent a colossal sum, almost £3,000, expanding the tower by building new structures, new fortifications. The size of the castle complex doubled as a new wall was built, complete with towers to defend this wall, and other buildings sprang up as well. For instance, a workshop for the royal bowyer, an existing chapel was eaten up by the expansion and incorporated into the castle grounds. And the area created by this initial expansion is known today as the Inner Ward, and quite a lot of it has survived through to this very day. Into the 13th century, the tower was further expanded under the rule of both King Henry III and King Edward I. And it was these building projects that left the tower looking more or less like it does today, 750 or so years later. It was more heavily fortified. New sections of wall were built, again, defended by more towers, a couple of gatehouses as well. And once again, more buildings were built too. The entire complex was expanded. New facilities such as the Royal Mint the Royal Mint was moved within the newly constructed walls. And the area created by this expansion, in contrast to the Inner Ward, is known as the Outer Ward and can be found, as I mentioned, if you visit the Tower of London today. Broadly speaking, the layout of the tower, it hasn't really changed since 1285 when this last round of expansion was completed. But even if the Tower of London was more or less finished from a structural point of view at that point, its history was only getting started. Despite its relatively unimpressive size by today's standards, the tower still loomed over much of inner London, a vast and impressive structure that served, again, as a potent reminder of the power of the king. And kings like John or Edward I jealously guarded the tower as a way of maintaining power in London and across the kingdom as a whole, often coming into conflict with angry barons as a result, some of whom actually attacked the Tower of London and were kept at bay by its mighty fortifications. But as we move now into the late medieval period, the tower's political importance actually began to wane. And while it remained an important royal icon, it wasn't quite as important as it had been. It also saw more and more prisoners kept there, high-ranking prisoners for the most part, who were, again, afforded these luxurious quarters and very generous treatment. They were also often able to just escape by bribing guards. So when you think about it, not really a very good prison. Actually, more like a fancy hotel by the sounds of things. You go there, you stay for a bit, you pay some money, and then you leave. Although I will say not everyone escaped. In the last full-length episode on Owain Glyndŵr, you'll remember we talked about how Henry IV held Richard II there. And poor old Dick, he never managed to escape. Henry starved him to death in the tower. In fact, a great many of the prisoners held in the tower around this time were of high social rank. It wasn't just King Richard II. The future King James I of Scotland was in there for a while. Countless French nobles during the Hundred Years' War, of course. And then King Henry the Sixth died in the tower during the War of the Roses. Little wonder the tower gained a reputation as a prison, given the status of those that were imprisoned there. Most notably, perhaps, was the 12-year-old King Edward V and his little brother Prince Richard, who were very probably murdered while in the tower on the orders of their uncle, Richard III. This is absolutely brutal. Edward V's uncle, Richard III, he seized power in 1483. He sent these two young boys to the tower and they were never seen again. They're assumed to have been killed in order to make sure that they couldn't then, you know, grow up and challenge King Richard III for the throne. But it wasn't long after this the tower wasn't really used as a royal residence anymore. And honestly, no bloody wonder. Who wants to run into the ghosts of murdered kids while you're trying to relax at home? From the 16th century onwards, the tower was used far more commonly for military purposes, and of course still for high-profile prisoners. Elizabeth I was in there for a bit. Walter Raleigh was also. Anne Boleyn too. And then later on, of course, Guy Fawkes, who was famously tortured in the Tower of London after the gunpowder plot was exposed. Episode 250, get across it. The Tower has a bit of a reputation as a place where a great many people were not just imprisoned, but also tortured and executed. And this this rather grim reputation it has as a place of, you know, barbarous mistreatment of its inmates is, well, it's not quite true, to be honest. People have sort of, I was going to say romanticized it, but there's nothing really romantic about torture. But you understand what I mean. The stories of, you know, horrific torture and all these gruesome executions have been kind of exaggerated to make it sound like there was always someone being flayed or crushed or racked or beheaded or shot or whatever at the Tower of London. But no, the truth is much more boring. There are only 48 recorded instances of people being tortured there. And I just realized that I say only 48. That's still 48 more times than would be ideal. But all the same, in the grand scheme of things, it's not really that many, although I don't feel great about saying that. Additionally, just over 100 people were executed there as well. So, you know, all the bloody and gruesome horror stories about people being tortured and killed there, it happened, but certainly not to the extent that I guess the public imagination would tell you. Anyway, into the modern period, the tower needed considerable work done to it, as it wasn't actually in great nick after a few centuries without major works being done. And so renovations were undertaken in the 17th and then later on in the 18th centuries. But it was widely accepted by this point that the tower couldn't really be relied upon as a seriously defensible structure. There were at one point plans to turn the tower into a star fort, the sort of fort built specifically to withstand attack from modern period artillery. But these plans never came to anything, and instead the numbers of guns and cannons held at the Tower of London was actually reduced, while money instead was spent on expanding storehouses and soldier accommodations. While it still maintained some of its defensive aspects, by the 19th century the tower was more of a military headquarters than it was a defensive fortification. Although the early 19th century saw it refortified during concerns that civil unrest would break out in London during the height of the Chartist movement. Also, the 19th century saw much of the medieval architecture and some of the medieval decorations destroyed by a bloke who was commissioned by Prince Albert to renovate and take care of the castle and the tower complex. He went in and anything that he looked at that he didn't think looked medieval enough was just ripped out. So in attempting to make the castle more medieval, he made it a lot less medieval by tearing out all these aspects of it that actually were from the medieval period. So that's a great shame. But these changes that were made to the castle were amongst the last major developments, or I guess, I don't know what the opposite of development, the last bits of officially sanctioned vandalism that took place on the Tower of London. Because into the 20th century, the tower was used to house soldiers and equipment, and of course prisoners as well, prisoners that didn't quite enjoy the same lavish treatment as some of the high-profile inmates that had been there before. But it was never really used as an actual military installation with the idea of, you know, defending the city or projecting royal power across the kingdom, anything like that. In the 20th century, it was used to hold prisoners of war. Most famously, of course, Rudolf Hess, Hitler's deputy, after he unsuccessfully attempted to defect in 1941. But the tower wasn't used as a prison for much longer. After the Second World War, amongst its last ever prisoners were the infamous criminal brothers Rodney and Reggie Cray. They were held there in the 1950s. But in the second half of the 20th century, the Tower of London was kind of repurposed, to be honest, as a tourist destination. The damage that was done during the Blitz was repaired, the whole complex was freshened up, and it was opened to the public. And ever since, the tower has remained one of the most popular tourist attractions in the city of London. And that is saying something, because there are a lot of bloody tourist attractions in the city of London. Technically speaking, it is still in official use by the British military. The Royal Regiment of Fusiliers are headquartered there, for instance. But mostly these days, it's just people dressed up in funny old costumes taking tourists about to have a squiz at the joint. And of course, the crown jewels still kept under armed guard, lest someone try to heist them again. Armed guards, you say? Oh, yes, there is still an official contingent of guards at the Tower of London, all dressed up in their silly uniforms. You may have seen them. They're known by their equally silly name of the Beefeaters. And that may be because, I suspect at least, it would take too long to say their proper official name every time, because the official name is as follows. The Yeoman Warders of His Majesty's Royal Palace and Fortress, the Tower of London, and members of the Sovereign's Bodyguard of the Yeoman Guard Extraordinary. That's not a gag. That's the official name of the Beefeaters. No wonder everyone just calls them Beefeaters. Who's got the time of the day? There's only so many hours in the day, mate. It does get sillier, though. It does get sillier. I very much enjoyed learning this because one of the official positions, to this very day, one of the official positions at the Tower of London has the spectacular title of Raven Master. According to tradition, a minimum of 6 ravens must be kept at the Tower of London, or, the legend goes, the kingdom will fall. And today, at the Tower of London, there are indeed a number of tame ravens that live there. There's Jubilee, Harris, Poppy, Georgie, Edgar, Branwen, and Rex. 7 ravens. Very smart. Keep one spare. So it turns out that the Tower of London is just as essential to the security of the kingdom today as it was almost 1,000 years ago when William the Conqueror first built it. Without the tower back then, maybe the new Norman kingdom would have fallen. And today, apparently all you have to do is scare away 6 ravens and bam, that's the end of the United Kingdom.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.